eat everything. Leave nothing for the rest of us.
I see. I decided I would let them finish cleaning up the block first and kill them on my way back. Hands in my pockets, I resumed walking.
Pretty girly girl. Want to live forever?
One of them grunted at my back. They all snorted and snuffled, as if at some inside joke. Like, duh, maybe eating them in exchange for sex really didn't give you immortality. Just some new, never-before-heard-of fey STD.
Got something you can suck on, girly girl.
Ew. Not a chance, I said coolly. They should have let me go. I would have let them go. But rhino boys aren't the brightest bulbs in the box. I heard hoofed feet shuffling, moving toward me. Their bribe hadn't worked, so they were switching tactics to brute force. They'd picked the wrong woman to mess with. I hate Unseelie. Think twice, I warned. I suspect rhino boys have a hard enough time thinking once. A few moments later, the six of them were dead, and I was walking toward BB&B, thoroughly pissed that I'd had to kill them before they finished wiring the lamps. The last look I'd gotten at the bookstore was late in the afternoon on that hellish Halloween that would forever be burned into my memory as the second worst night of my life. All the exterior lights had been broken out. I wasn't sure what to expect as I turned down the street I'd once considered my way home. I stopped, stared, and smiled faintly. Of course. On a street of heavily damaged and looted buildings, BB&B alone stood untouched. The elegantly restored facade of the old-world four-story brick building was immaculate. The spotlights mounted on the front, rear, and sides, which had been broken out last I saw it, were now replaced. The brightly painted shingle proclaiming Barron's Books and Baubles had been rehung perpendicular to the building, suspended over the sidewalk on an elaborate brass pole, and it creaked as it swung in the drizzly breeze. The sign in the old-fashioned green-tinted windows glowed soft neon, closed. Amber torches in brass sconces illuminated the deep limestone archway of the bookstore's grand alcoved entrance. Ornate cherry diamond-paned doors, nestled between limestone columns, gleamed in the light. I wondered if the bookstore meant something to him that he'd gone to such lengths. Did it hold sentimental value? Or was it merely his possession, his statement to the world in general that nothing and no one would ever take what was his? I stepped into the alcove, tried the door. It was unlocked. I pushed it open. I never tire of my first glimpse of my shop. Once you get past the immediate sense of spatial distortion, as if you've opened the door of an old-fashioned phone booth only to find the Library of Congress inside, you notice that luxury and comfort have never gone so effortlessly hand in hand. The main room is about 80 feet long by 60 feet wide and vaults 5 stories to a muraled ceiling. On the second, third, fourth, and fifth floors, bookcases line each wall from base to cove molding. Behind elegant banisters, catwalks permit access, while ladders slide on oiled rollers from one section to the next. But it's the first floor I spend so much time on, with its freestanding bookcases crammed with all the latest, greatest reads, standing tall on polished wood floors scattered with plush rugs. 2 seating cozies, fore and aft, boast opulent yet comfy Chesterfield sofas, and brocaded chairs topped by soft throws, centered around my beloved respite from the Dublin rain and cold, fancy enameled gas fireplaces. I glanced at my well-stocked magazine rack, sadly out of date, and my cashier's counter. I smiled at the old-fashioned register with the tiny silver bell that tinkled whenever the drawer popped open. I moved to the counter. A note was propped on the register. Welcome home, Miss Lane. Arrogant, overconfident jackass. Keys lay on the counter beside it. I wondered what car he'd left me this time. I was reaching for the keys when, out of the blue, emotions bombarded me, intense and confusing. They were accompanied by a barrage of memories, the day I'd stumbled into this place. My anxiety at being lost, meeting Barons for the first time. My naive conviction that he was exactly the kind of man I would never date. "And we haven't dated!" I crushed the note in my fist. Just had completely uninhibited raw sex. Months of it. I closed my eyes. More memories of this place crashing over me. The night I'd seen the gray man devour a woman's beauty and had rushed here for answers, with no idea what was wrong with me, but already suspecting it was permanent. The night I'd accepted his offer of a fourth-floor bedroom overlooking the back alley and moved in. The day my daddy had come looking for me, and I'd realized I could never go home to Ashford until the madness in Dublin was over, and I'd either succeeded or didn't care because I'd be going home the same way as Alina. In a box. The night I'd given Barons a birthday cake, then eaten it alone after it had splatted from the ceiling. I inhaled his scent. He was near, a few feet away. Lust nearly buckled my knees. He was a tireless lover. There was nothing off-limits with him.
Miss Lane.
I fisted my hands in my pockets and opened my eyes. He stood across the counter, eyes dark, features impassive. Barons?
It's a hammer.
Alpha? I said hopefully. His obsidian gaze mocked. Would I waste my time with anything less? Danny's moving in, I told him.
Danny's going back to the Abbey.
Then I am too.
I hear you're not welcome there.
I will be soon. I have plans, and I need her.
You need me,
he said flatly.
I thought you'd have figured that out by now.
I had. I kept getting knocked down, and I kept getting back up again a little stronger each time. But I still wasn't strong enough. One day I would be. Until then, Barons was the only one that scared all my enemies away. If IYD really would have worked on Halloween, he definitely guaranteed me the highest odds of survival. I was done hopping from swell to swell, trying to avoid the titles. Right or wrong, good or bad, I'd chosen. Barons was my wave, but there was no way I was living alone with him. I needed a buffer, and my buffer needed a place to live, too. What's wrong with Danny staying here?
She's in more danger at your side.
I don't think she'll go. She has a mind of her own.
Then figure out how to convince her it's best for both of you.
It might take a few days. According to the LM, I had only 3 anyway. Give me that much, at least. Once she was here, I'd work on keeping her here, and put her to work with her super hearing and other senses at figuring out what was under his garage and how to get us down there. He might be my wave, but he wasn't my surfboard. Knowledge and usefulness were all that stood between me and the riptide. He studied me for a moment, then nodded tightly.
48 hours. Keep the kid under control and out of my way, and there are new rules. 1, stay away from Chester's. That means a 10-block radius. 2, you share all pertinent information with me without my having to ask. 3, keep the kid away from my garage. 4, if you try to force yourself into my head, I will force myself into your pants.
Oh, that's total bullshit.
Tit for tat.
His gaze dropped to my breasts, and I had a sudden, much too detailed memory of yanking my shirt up while he'd watched them pop out jiggling.
Oh, would that be tit for tit?
There's no need to be rude.
I can think of endless needs to be rude.
Keep them to yourself.
Such a different tune you whistle now.
You sound angry, Barons. Frustrated. What's wrong? You get a little addicted to me? His lips drew back, baring his teeth. I'd felt them on my nipples. I could almost feel them there now.
We fucked, Miss Lane. Even cockroaches fuck. They eat each other, too.
Same page, Barons.
Same bloody word,
he agreed. Oh, yes, here we were, working together again. All was well, or at least back to normal, at Barons' Books and Baubles.
I really get to live at Barons',
With, like, barons? Danny exclaimed, bounding from foot to foot, backward as we walked through Temple Bar. We were on our way to intercept the She-Seers. Danny had learned that a group of several dozen, led by Cat, was coming into the city tonight to scout it out. No, I said dryly, with, like, the L.M. and his minions. I'm living with barons! Holy feckin' shit! Way cool! Doesn't it bother you that we have no idea what he is or whether he's good or bad? Nope, not a bit. Her eyes sparkled. I snorted. She was completely serious. I wished I could be so uncomplicated. But I couldn't. Right and wrong, good and bad, mattered to me. Blame it on my parents. They endowed me with a massively inconvenient sense of ethics. We're almost there, Mac. I hear 'em dead ahead. She cocked her head, then her eyes widened. Oh, Rose gonna be wicked pissed. She told 'em not to fight, no matter what. Just to suss out what's going down, and how many are where. We gotta hurry, Mac. It don't sound like it's going good. I didn't have time to brace myself for the rough ride. Her hand was on my arm, and we were gone. Danny slammed us to a stop, directly in the middle of the fight. It was huge, messy, and filled the street from one end of the block to the next. Danny loves the action. Unfortunately, she forgets that the rest of us aren't as fast as she is. She arrived with her sword drawn, perfectly at ease, moving in hyperspeed mode. But it took me a moment to fumble my spear from my shoulder holster. In that moment, I got slammed in the back of my head so hard that I saw stars, and brackets from my McHalo went flying in three different directions. Snarling, I spun around and drove my spear into an Unseelie's head, I think. It had three roundish things on its shoulders with dozens of slits that spewed icy, stinging liquid as it fell. Then the fight became a blur of motion, of spinning, kicking, nulling, and stabbing. I glimpsed Kat's wide eyes, her terrified face. I had no doubt this was her first fight, and it had come out of the blue. Between Unseelie, I caught glimpses of other She-Seers. They were trying desperately to hold their own. Most of the time, the gifts inside us are dormant, but the presence of Fae, and especially of engaging in battle, slams them awake. I could see they were in that special She-Seer state. Stronger, faster, tougher, more resilient. But it wasn't enough. There was too much fear in their eyes. Fear translates to hesitation, and hesitation kills. If you've ever been behind someone on an on-ramp who's trying to merge onto a highway but is scared to do it, going too slow, stopping and starting, and growing more uncertain by the minute, you know what I mean. There you are, hemmed in by traffic, trapped behind rampant indecision, and you know that if they don't get their act together and merge, you're going to end up getting hit. That's how the She-Seers were fighting. I cursed Rowena for not training them better, for sheltering them so completely that their gifts were a hazard to their own health and mine. Danny and I moved together, back to back, slicing and stabbing our way through the mob of Unseelie.
Help me!
I heard Kat scream. I glanced wildly toward the sound. She was trapped between two large winged things with sharp talons and teeth that looked horrifyingly like raptors. I assessed. I acted. Later, I would puzzle over my decision, wonder what temporary insanity had possessed me. But I knew they couldn't touch it, and she could, and I knew she was dead otherwise, and nobody was dying on my watch if I had anything to say about it.
Cat!
I yelled. When she looked, I drew back my arm, tossed my spear at her, and watched it go flying end over end. Her eyes widened in astonishment. She lunged into the air, snagged the spear, landed lightly on the balls of her feet, and took them both out in one smooth ricochet of motion, left to right. It was beautiful. If I'd had a remote, I'd have hit replay a dozen times. And there I stood, without a weapon. Then I had a leathery appendage in my face that probably should have broken my nose, but didn't, and I was under attack and lost sight of Cat and my spear. I slammed my palms into my attacker, nulling it. While it stood frozen, I retreated into my mind. into that special she-seer place. Without my spear, I was in deep shit, and I needed more power. Abruptly, the street faded, and I was inside my own head, staring down into a huge black pool. Was this the source of what made a she-seer, this vast obsidian lake? I'd never seen it before when I'd gone poking around. Was I so much stronger now that I could see more clearly, probe more deeply? Power radiated from its dark depths, crackled in the air of the cave in which I stood. I could feel something in the water waiting in the darkness. What lay concealed beneath the surface knew everything, could do everything, feared nothing. It was waiting for me, to call it forth, to use it as my birthright. But doubt, as vast as the thing's watery habitat, immobilized me. What if whatever I summoned from those ancient depths wasn't a part of me at all, but something else entirely? If it was me, I could use it. But if by some bizarre twist of events, and no events were too bizarre to consider in my day-to-day existence, there was something down there that wasn't me, it could use me. I didn't trust myself. No, I didn't trust that she-seer place. Why would I? I hadn't even known it existed until a few months ago. Until I knew more about what it was and wasn't, I wasn't calling forth any unknowns. My current skills would have to suffice. I shook my head sharply, and I was in the street again, with a raptor thing about to take a bite out of me. I ducked. Its head flew to the side, and its body slid to the cobbled stone, leaving Danny standing where it had been, grinning at me.
Pull your head out of your arse, Mac!
We moved into pattern. I nulled, she killed. I don't know how long I fought without my spear, but it was long enough to give me a taste of what I was asking my sisters in arms. I cursed Rowena for sending them into Dublin without guns, without iron bullets. I would never let them be such walking targets. I kept looking for Cat, but couldn't find her in the mess. Without my spear, I felt naked, exposed. I felt wrong. I slammed my palms into a tall, beetle-bodied unseelie with a thick, many-plated carapace. It didn't freeze. I drew back my fist, and suddenly there was another hand around mine. And when I drove it forward, Cat and I sunk the spear in its armor-like hide together. As it crashed to the pavement, I glanced over my shoulder. Cat smiled, nodded, and let go of the spear, leaving it in my hand. Then she turned her back to mine and moved into pattern with me, as I had with Danny. Although she wasn't a null, she had a wicked uppercut, and we made a great team. Danny paired off with another she-seer, and the battle raged on. Later, we sat on curbs, leaned against buildings, and sprawled on the sidewalks, dirty, splattered with disgusting variations of unseely blood, exhilarated and exhausted. "What happened?" I asked Cat. "How did you get stuck in the middle of so many of them?" She flushed. "We've grown accustomed to having Danny with us, we have. She hears what we can't. I think they must have begun following us the moment we entered the city, drawn by our hats." She tapped her Michaelo. "Or perhaps the noise of the bus. They gathered more as we went, biding time, looking for a tight spot to close in. If you hadn't happened along, well, as glad we are that you did." I assessed the carnage. There were several hundred unseelie dead in the street.
"We did good.
With guns and a plan, we could do better." Cat nodded. "May we speak plainly?" I inclined my head. "Your differences with the Grand Mistress hurt us all."
"Then she should wise up and see reason."
"Her differences with you hurt us, too," Cat said pointedly.
"War is no time for a coup. Continue fighting each other, and you'll end up destroying the kingdom you're after ruling."
There was a chorus of murmured assents in the street.
"I'm not trying to rule. I'm just trying to help."
"You're both trying to rule, and we're telling you both to stop. We've been talking since you and Danny left. We want you back. We don't care if you keep the weapons, but we're not willing to trade Rowena's guidance for yours. We want you both. If you agree to team up, we'll help you in whatever way we can and make Rowena accept it too. The way we see it, neither you nor Rowena can force us to accept either one of you. But we're willing to bet we can force you two to work together for the greater good. That is what you both say you're after, isn't it?
I'm not living at the Abbey, Mac.
Danny bounded to her feet.
You said I could live with Barons.
I looked from Danny to Cat, considering her words. She'd made a point, and I was feeling a little ashamed of myself. I had made it personal with Rowena. I'd tried to divide and conquer, and now was not the time to be dividing loyalties over anything. We had enough problems as it was. My whole goal in sending Danny to the Abbey today was to find out when the She-Seers were coming in, so I could take them into battle, pump them up on victory, and regain a foothold in the Abbey. Cat was offering it to me, hand outstretched. 500 She-Seers could force Rowena to cooperate with me, and all I'd have to do was bite my tongue a lot.
I'm convinced, Cat. Convince Rowena. But you said...
Danny exploded. I sighed. I wanted my buffer, but Barons had a point, too. It wasn't just about me. I need you where you're safest, Danny. After the Unseelie Princess took you today, I'm afraid that's not with me. She-Seers gasped.
You were taken by the Unseelie Princess, Danny? What? How? Where did they take you? What happened?
Suddenly, Danny was the center of attention. Preening, she began to tell them all about it. I watched the show. Danny knew how to dazzle and loved doing it, smiling faintly, feeling sad. I wasn't ready to give her up. Or face the rest of the night alone with Barons. I'd rather fight another blockful of Unseelie. I looked at Cat.
We'll meet you at the Abbey in the morning. If the old woman behaves, so will I.
You have my word. She gave me a level look, then her gaze dropped to the spear strapped to my thigh. I don't need your word, Mac. You gave me something else tonight that said it all. Chapter 19
Michaela.
We were a block from the bookstore when Belaine's voice slid out of the darkness, an orchestral variation on an erotic dream. The Fae have extraordinary voices, melodious and rich. The notes vibrate under your skin, sleek and sensual against the tips of your nerve endings. If the song of making really is a song, I'm not sure a human could survive hearing it. I used to have what I would have called a normal sex drive. Some of my friends were beyond obsessed with it, though. I guess they thought it would fill the void of purposelessness so many in my generation are afflicted with, while trying to find our place in the world. But being Priya changed me. Left me with a voracious awareness of all things sexual. Or maybe sex with Barons did it. I don't know. All I know is that I'm far more attuned to erotic nuances than I used to be. The Seelie Prince's murmur was a full-body caress, and I appreciated it for a moment before shrugging it off.
Belaine!
Danny exclaimed. He laughed, and if I hadn't been immune to death by sex fae glamour, I would have been in serious trouble. He was putting on the seduction, beautiful golden fae, radiating pure sexual heat. I've begun to think it's simply part of his nature, that he can't help it any more than some men can prevent themselves from oozing testosterone. I think some males of both species just have more. Danny wasn't immune. Her eyes were feverishly bright, her skin flushed, her lips parted. I caught a glimpse in that moment of the woman she would become.
Stop it, Belaine. Leave her alone.
I do not believe she wishes me to. Who better to awaken her to the shape and texture of Eros? Set the bar, so to speak.
Uh-huh, Danny said thickly. I'd like that.
I don't care what you believe or what she wishes, and you will not be setting the bar. She's going to have a normal life. At least as close to normal as I could make it. Danny, get inside the bookstore. I'll join you in a few minutes.
But I don't want...
Now, I said. She glared. I bet Barons is there, I dangled. To Belaine, I said. Dampen yourself so she can shake the thrall. He lifted and dropped one shoulder. Danny made a soft sigh, as if abruptly released from some inner tension she wasn't entirely glad to be free of, then glanced from Villain to the bookstore and back again, as if trying to choose between a banana split and a fudge sundae. Then, "Fine," she said, and flashed out. At the door, she tossed a saucy grin over a shoulder and said, "Take your time, Mac. Me and Barron's, we got stuff to talk about." I bit back a snort of laughter, remembering my own teen crushes. They'd been nightmares of awkwardness and nervous tension, of feeling gauche, too clumsy for words and needy. I trusted that Barron's would deftly deflect her hero worship. It was only with me that he was a constant jackass. I watched until she was safely inside and the door closed behind her. Although there were no indications the dark zone that had once neighbored BB&B still existed, I didn't trust those shadow-filled streets beyond the bookstore. I looked back at Villain. He was studying me intently.
"You have been battling. Are you well, Michaela?"
"I'm fine." My reflexes had been dynamite tonight. Even though I took a few crushing blows, I'd managed to duck or pull back at the last minute and minimize the impact every time. I didn't even feel bruised anywhere. No cuts, no contusions. I felt fantastic. I loved this sleeker, stronger me. The floodlights on the top of BB&B flashed on. The street was suddenly blindingly bright. I had no doubt Barron's was about to step outside. Villain shot the bookstore a beautifully imitated look of disgust. Then his arms were around me, and we were gone. We reappeared, high in the dark night sky. He was holding my hand. I made the horrific mistake of glancing down briefly. I yanked my gaze back up again. I was standing on nothing, black air beneath my feet. Why wasn't I falling? As soon as I thought that, I began to fall. I lunged at him, wrapped my arms and legs around him, and clung for dear life. His arms cradled me instantly.
"I should have done this long ago, Michaela,"
he purred.
"Be at ease. I will not let you fall. Look down."
"That's a definite not." I had no idea how high up we were, but it was cold. I squeezed my eyes shut. "Are we just hanging in the sky? Floating here?" This distressed me tremendously. I'm quite certain we were created with feet because we're supposed to walk on the surface of the planet. Key word there being surface, not above it, not below it.
"You would feel safer in one of those conveyances that frequently plummet."
"Not that frequently."
"All that is required to end a mortal life is one such fall. Yet you assume the risk. Humans are irrational and foolish."
"This irrational, foolish human wants her feet on the ground."
"I have a gift for you, Michaela. I have... what is that word?"
He trailed off, and I was startled to realize there was a teasing note in his voice.
"Ah, I have it,"
he said lightly.
"Labored. I have worked to give you this gift. I have not merely waved my fairy wand and made it so."
He was teasing. I wasn't sure what disconcerted me more, hanging in the night sky or listening to Villain tease. The L.M. claimed that he was changed by exposure to humans. Was Villain?
"This is the best way to present my gift."
I looked down when we got here. Lots of dark space. I think I saw stars.
"The stars are above us. Look again."
His tone made it clear he was going to keep us hanging here all night if I didn't do what he said. Sighing, I opened my eyes, took a hasty, panicked look down, and squeezed my eyes shut again. Then I realized what I'd just seen, and my eyes flew open again. We were several thousand feet up, and city lights glittered far below. City lights! We were above a brilliant aura that could only be a major metropolitan area. "I thought the power was out everywhere," I exclaimed.
"I have been working with other Seelie to see it restored,"
he said with pride. "Where are we?"
"Beneath us is your Atlanta. On the coast, the lights of Savannah."
He pointed.
There, Ashford. I told you I would keep your parents safe. When Barons beat me by a mere matter of minutes in saving you, I turned my efforts to saving those who matter most to you. Barons has still never spared them a thought. The dark zones that swallowed the cities nearest your home, threatening to spread, have been eradicated. Power is restored. Even now humans learn to defend themselves. My gift to you is your Georgia back.
I stared down at the lights, then at him. Could you do this for the whole world?
Much of our power stems from our ability to manipulate dimensions beyond yours. But the fabric of the human dimension is viscous, thick. The laws of your physics are not as bendable as ours. This alteration required much time, cooperation with other Seelie and many humans.
In Valaine speak, that translated to a no. He'd done this for me and would do no more.
Your parents are safe. Would you like to see them?
I swallowed against a sudden lump in my throat. Mom and Dad were down there. One of those glittering lights beneath me, a mere sift away. They'd always been a mere sift away, but somehow, in Dublin, with 4,000 miles between us, it had been easier to keep that fact blocked from my mind, so I wouldn't be tempted. So I wouldn't hurt, or worry, or risk exposing their existence to my enemies. I'd crammed Mom and Dad into my padlocked box, with all my other forbidden thoughts. Was that what Alina had done with us, too? I caught my breath. I shouldn't. I knew better. Take me to the street outside the brickyard, I said. I'll walk from there. I was here, and I couldn't resist. I wanted to see my world again. I wanted to walk the oak and magnolia-lined streets of my hometown. I wanted to stand outside my house and look up at my bedroom window. I wanted to see if I could find any trace of the girl I'd once been in these streets, or if she'd been completely swallowed up by a dark, fey dream. I didn't dare risk being seen, so I would have to stay to the shadows. But I've gotten good at that lately. I lightly touched down, my boots settled on pavement. There was the brickyard, on its large lot, tucked between two antebellums. The lights were on inside and out. Nothing had changed. I hurried up the walk, peered into a window. Oh, how wrong I was. Everything had changed. Ashford's police force, firemen, the mayor, and about 100 townspeople were inside, and I didn't need to crack a window to know they were discussing strategy. The walls were down, and the whole world knew it now. If there'd been national newspapers up and running, the headlines would be about nothing else. The Fae were visible, and here were the grassroots efforts of my town to protect itself. I wanted to march in and help, educate, take up arms and protect.
Your place and purpose are not here, Michaela.
I forced myself to turn away, melt like a thief into the night. It was warm for January in Ashford, but that wasn't so unusual. I've spent Christmases in ice storms. I've spent them in shorts and a t-shirt. Tonight was a jeans and tea night. As I walked, I inhaled deeply. There was nothing blooming this time of year, but I swear the deep south always smells of magnolias, wild azaleas, sweet tea, and somebody frying chicken somewhere. In a month, pansies would bloom all over town. Ashford was nuts about pansies, followed by jonquils and tulips. I was home, I smiled. It was safe. No shades, no unseelie, lights on everywhere. I spun in a delighted circle in the middle of the street. How I'd missed my world, how lost I'd felt so far away. It all looked exactly the same. It felt as if I'd never left. As if 3 blocks down and 2 blocks over, I'd find Mom, Dad, and Alina playing Scrabble, waiting for me to get home from night class or work to join them, and get my petunia trounced because Alina and Dad knew words that any reasonable person would have agreed shouldn't be words at all, like ort and quod. Really, who knew words like that? And we'd laugh, and I'd worry about what outfit to wear tomorrow,
and go to sleep with nothing more troubling on my mind than whether my petition to OPI to unretire my favorite shade had been heard. It had, and they'd sent me a pretty pink and gold certificate conferring upon me the title of honorary OPI affiliate, which I'd hung with great pride next to my vanity, where I did my hair and makeup. Ah, the trials and tribulations of a sheltered youth! There was the Brooks's house, proud white southern columns at the top of a grand circular drive. There was the Jennings's place, with its romantic turrets and loads of white lattice accents. I walked the streets, drinking in the sights. I'd always thought Ashford had such rich history, but it was really very young, only a few centuries, compared to Dublin's millennia. Then I was outside my house, standing in the street, sick with anticipation. I hadn't seen Mom since August 2nd, the day I'd left for Dublin. My last glimpse of Dad had been on August 28th when I'd dropped him at the Dublin airport and sent him back home. He'd flown over to find me, determined to take me back to Ashford with him. But Barron's had voiced him, coerced him into not worrying about me, planted who knew what kind of commands inside my dad's head to get him to leave and not come back. I both hated and appreciated that Barron's had done it. Jack Lane is one seriously strong-willed man. He'd never have left without me, and I'd never have been able to keep him safe. I moved silently up the walk. A dozen feet from the front door, a mirror appeared, suspended in the air in front of me. I shivered, as if someone had walked over my grave. Mirrors are no longer simple things to me. Since the night I stared into the silver that Barron's keeps in his study at BB&B and watched the twisted, dark creatures moving around inside it, looking at my own reflection has been unsettling, as if all mirrors are suspect and something dark and horrifying might materialize at any moment behind my shoulder.
"In case you were considering being seen,"
Belaine cautioned, stepping into view behind my shoulder. I looked at myself. The moment I'd seen our house, I regressed in my mind to the curvy, pretty girl who'd raced down our front walk for the cab so many months ago, long blonde hair swinging, short white skirt showcasing perfect golden legs. When was the last time I'd shaved? Manicure and pedicure, meticulously enameled, purse and shoes matching, jewelry in theme. I stared at myself now. I was a wild woman, dressed from head to toe in black leather. There was slimy green goop in my tangle of midnight curls. I was stained with vile-smelling, unsealy body fluids. My nails were ripped to the quick, and I was toting a black leather backpack full of lights and ammunition, wearing a battered bike helmet and carrying a semi-automatic weapon. He'd made his point.
"Make it go away," I said stiffly.
The mirror vanished. I didn't belong here. Nothing good could come of my presence. Sure, I could ask Belaine to make me pretty and clean with glamour and drop in for a visit. But what would I say? What could I hope to accomplish? And wouldn't every minute that I remained here potentially invite unsavory attention my parents' way? After all I'd been through, after all I'd seen, I still couldn't come home. There was a whole world out there in trouble. My mom and dad were safe. I felt a sudden rush of gratitude toward Belaine and turned to him. "Thank you," I said. "It means the world to me that you protected them." He smiled, and I think it was the first real smile I'd ever seen on his face. It was blinding.
"You are welcome, Michaela. Shall we go?"
He held out a hand. I would have taken it, should have taken it, but just then I heard voices. Cocking my head, I listened. My heart constricted. It was Mom and Dad. They were on the screened lanai that overlooked the pool in the back of our house. Dense bushes at each side afforded privacy from our neighbors. I could go press myself into the holly branches and, shielded from their gaze, catch a glimpse of them. I was starved for a glimpse of them. I slipped off my Michaelo, dropped my backpack and gun. "In a moment," I whispered. "You stay here, I'll be back."
"I deem this unwise."
"Not your decision, back off." I slipped into the shadows near my home.
We've been over this again and again, Rainey,
my dad was saying. I wedged quietly into the bushes and stared hungrily. Mom and Dad were sitting on white wicker chairs on the lanai. Mom was sipping wine, and Dad was holding a glass of bourbon. I hoped he wasn't drinking too much. There'd been a bad time after Alina had died when he'd slurred too often for my comfort. Dad's not a drinker. He's a doer. But Alina's murder had fried us all. I absorbed my mom's face greedily. Her eyes were clear, her face gently lined and beautiful as ever. My heart swelled with emotion. I ached to touch her, hug them both. Daddy looked robust and handsome as ever, but there was more silver in his hair than I remembered.
I know it's dangerous out there, my mom said, but I can't stand this not knowing. If I just knew for certain she was alive.
Barron's said she was. You were here when he called.
Barron's had called my parents? When? How was his phone working? Damn, I wanted his service provider.
I don't trust that man one bit.
Neither do I, Mom, and I slept with him. My face heated. Sex and Mom are two thoughts that don't fit comfortably in my head at the same time.
We have to go to Dublin, Jack.
I silently willed 1,000 no's in my mom's direction. Dad sighed.
I tried to go back, remember?
I blinked. He had? When? What had happened? Mom pounced on it.
My point exactly, Jack. You believe that man hypnotized you, planted blocks in your mind that prevented you from bringing her home, forced you to leave, and is somehow keeping you from going back. You couldn't even get on the plane, you got so sick.
But the moment you left the airport, you were fine.
3 times you tried to go, yet you accept his word that our daughter is okay?
You could have knocked me over with a feather. My dad knew Barron's had done something woo-woo to him and actually believed it possible. Daddy didn't believe in woo-woo things. It was he who'd taught me an abject rejection of all things paranormal. And he and my mother were calmly sipping their drinks, discussing this stuff.
We can't go over there now. You heard what the scouts told Officer Deaton. Fey reality has gotten mixed up with ours. The few airplanes that have taken off have either come crashing down in flames or disappeared.
What about a private charter?
What good will it do if we die trying to get to her?
We have to do something, Jack. I need to know she's alive.
No, I need more than that. We have to tell her.
You should have told her then when you were there, when you had the chance.
Told me what? I pressed deeper into the shrubs, all ears. Dad rubbed his eyes. I could tell by the look on his face that he and Mom had been having this conversation a lot lately.
We promised we'd never talk about it.
I nearly beat the bushes with frustration. Talk about what?
We made other promises we broke, Mom said pointedly. That's what got us into this situation to begin with.
What would you have had me tell her, Rainey?
The truth?
Come on, Daddy, spill it.
What is the truth? One person's truth is another person's...
Don't play attorney with me, Jack. I'm not the jury, and this isn't your opening argument,
Mom said dryly. He opened his mouth and closed it, looking sheepish. After a moment, he said,
Mac was having enough problems dealing with Alina's death. There was no way I was going to tell her about some crazy Irish woman and an even crazier prophecy. Our baby'd been battling depression for months. She had enough on her plate.
Prophecy? Mom and Dad knew about the prophecy? Did everyone know about the blasted thing but me?
What you heard all those years ago when you went digging for Alina's medical records doesn't seem so crazy now, does it?
Mom said. Dad took a sip of bourbon. He exhaled and seemed to deflate.
Christ, Rainey. 15 years passed, perfectly normal.
She ranted about fairies. Who wouldn't have thought she was crazy?
I'm not sure Dad even heard her. He tossed back the rest of the glass in one swallow.
I let Alina do the one thing I promised the adoption people I'd never let either of them do,
he said roughly.
We let her do it, Mom said sharply. Stop blaming yourself. I let her go to Ireland, too.
You didn't want to. I pushed.
We both made the decision. We've always made the big decisions together.
Well, this was one decision you weren't there to help me make. When I was in Dublin with Mac, you still weren't talking to me. I couldn't even get you on the phone.
I'm sorry, Mom said after a long pause. The grief. She trailed off, and my stomach knotted. She was getting that look in her eyes again. That one that had bruised my heart every day until I'd run away to Dublin. Daddy looked at her hard, and right before my eyes he changed. I watched him inflate again, shake off his own emotions, and puff himself up for her. Become her man, her rock. I smiled. I loved him so much. He'd dragged Mom kicking and screaming from grief once before, and I knew I could rest easy that he would never let grief steal her from him again, no matter what happened to me. He stood up and stalked over to her.
What would you have had me say, Rainey?
Dad said loudly, jarring her, keeping her from slipping inward.
Baby, I'm sorry to tell you this, but according to some ancient prophecy, there's something wrong with you, and you're going to doom the whole world?
He snorted, then laughed.
Laugh with me, Rainey. Come on.
He pulled her to her feet.
Not our girl. Not a chance. You know it's bogus.
I gagged. Hand to my mouth, I staggered backward and nearly fell. There was something wrong with me? I was going to doom the whole world? Their mother gave them up because she believed it, Mom fretted.
That's what the crazy lady alleged,
Dad said firmly.
She didn't have a single shred of evidence. I interrogated her thoroughly. She'd never seen this supposed prophecy and couldn't point me in the direction of anyone who had. For Christ's sake, Rainey. It's a country that believes in leprechauns, rainbows, and pots of gold. Can I rest my case?
But there are fairies, Jack, Mom persisted. The crazy woman was right about that. They're here now in our world destroying it.
Circumstantial. One accurate prediction doesn't make an entire prophecy.
She said one of our girls would die young and the other would wish she was dead.
Alina almost died when she was 8, remember? But she didn't. That's young. Just because she died in her 20s doesn't mean anything else the woman said is true. And it certainly doesn't mean anything's wrong with Mac. I think the Fae are far more likely to doom our world than any human is. Besides, I don't believe in fate, and neither do you. I believe in free will. All the advice I gave her, all the love and wisdom you showered on her, that's what she has now. And I believe it's enough. I know our daughter. She's as good as they come.
He reached for her hands and pulled her into his arms.
Babe, she's alive. I know she is. I can feel it in my heart. I knew when Alina was dead. And I know Mac's not.
You're just saying that to make me feel better. He gave her a faint smile.
Is it working?
My mom punched him lightly. Oh, you.
I love you, Rainey. I almost lost you when we lost Alina.
He kissed her.
I won't lose you now. Maybe there's some way to get into contact with Barons again.
If only I knew for certain, Mom said. He kissed her again, then she was kissing him back, and I was feeling strangely embarrassed, because my parents were pretty much making out. Still, watching them was comforting. They had each other, and there was love between them that would withstand anything. Alina and I had always intuited, with no small wry pique, that although our parents adored us and would do anything for us, they loved each other more. As far as I was concerned, that was the way it should be. Kids grow up, move on, and find a love of their own. The empty nest shouldn't leave parents grieving. It should leave them ready and excited to get on with living their own adventure, which would, of course, include many visits to children and grandchildren. I took one last long look and went to join Verlaine. He moved into step beside me in silence and offered his hand, but I shook my head. I picked up my stuff, went to the mailbox, and pulled the LM's photo album out of my backpack.
I looked through it for a few moments until I found the perfect picture of Alina, standing in front of the arched entry at Trinity College. She was smiling, open-mouthed on a laugh. I smiled back. I turned it over and scrawled on the back. She was happy. I love you, Mom and Dad. I'll be home as soon as I can. Mac. Chapter 20.
You may find you have need of me, Michaela,
said Valaine, as we materialized in the street outside BB&B. I'd been thinking that very thing. There was no disputing that Valaine was the fastest elevator in the building. Danny was great on the ground, but not across oceans. Sifting was an invaluable tool. Even if Valaine appeared only half the times I called him, it would be better than nothing. I would never count on him again, but I would use him if I could.
I cannot always be checking to see if you do. When my queen does not have me occupied with her tasks, I am busy battling with other Seelie against our dark brethren. They do not consider your earth enough. They seek to wrest our court from us as well. My queen is in ever-increasing danger, as is my home.
He turned me in his arms, tilted my face up, and ran a gentle finger over my lips. I looked up at him. I was still numb from seeing Mom and Dad, from the conversation I'd overheard. I wanted him to give me his name back, and quickly, so I could drag myself inside, shower, and crawl into a warm, familiar bed. Pull the covers up over my head and try with all my might to fall asleep instantly, so I wouldn't have to think anymore. Doom the whole world. No way. Not me. They had the wrong person, wrong prophecy. I shook my head. He misinterpreted it.
It is a gift,
he said stiffly. Wounded, proud prince. I touched his face. He'd given me my mom and dad, my whole town, the entire state of Georgia back. I was shaking my head at something I was thinking, not your words. Yes, I'd like to have your name, Valaine. He gave me that brilliant smile again, then his mouth was on mine. This time, when he kissed me, the unpronounceable Fey name slid sweeter than Tupelo honey across my tongue, and pooled there, warm and delicious, filling my mouth with a feast of taste and sensation beyond description, before melting into the meat of it. Unlike the other times he'd implanted his name in my tongue, it felt natural, unobtrusive. Also unlike those times, I wasn't battered by an erotic attack, forced into orgasm by his touch. It was an extraordinary kiss, but it invited without invading, gave without taking. He drew back.
We are learning from each other,
he said.
I begin to understand Adam.
I blinked. The first man? You know about Adam and Eve? Valaine didn't seem the kind to study human creation myths.
No. One of my race that chose to become human,
he clarified.
Ah, Barons comes growling.
He gave the startling equivalent of a human snicker and was gone. I reached instinctively for my spear. It was back in the holster. I frowned. I'd forgotten to check. Had it ever been gone? I turned. Growling was a mild word for it. Baron stood in the doorway, and if looks could kill, I'd have been flayed alive in the street.
One would think you'd have gotten all the fey shoved in your mouth you could stand, Miss Lane.
One would think that I'd gotten all the male shoved in my mouth that I could stand. One day I'm going to choose to kiss a man. Not because I'm being raped, and not because I'm being scraped up off a street named Priya, and not because I'm being given the mystical equivalent of a cell phone with all the usual cell phone service problems, but because I bloody well want to. I pushed past him. He didn't move an inch. Electricity sizzled where our bodies brushed.
Tomorrow night, 10 o'clock. Be here, Miss Lane.
I'm fighting with the She-Seers, I tossed over my shoulder.
Call it an early night, or find somewhere else to live.
At noon the next day, Danny, all the other She-Seers at the Abbey, and I were gathered in one of their enormous cafeterias, seated around tables,
listening as Rowena addressed the crowd. And oh, did the woman know how to sway sentiment. The canny GM was the consummate politician. I listened, committing her tactics to memory, analyzing the words she chose, how she strung them together, how she played emotion for everything it was worth. Yes, she said, she would put aside her differences with the young rogue she-seer, who'd never been properly trained, and whose sister had betrayed the entire world by helping her lover, the villainous Lord Master, free the Unseelie to kill billions of people around the globe, including 200 of our own. Yes, she would agree to do whatever they felt must be done to win the most important battle humankind had ever faced. She could not in good conscience step aside or take off the robe she'd been wearing for 47 years, more than twice as long as the rogue she-seer had even been alive. But she would extend her hand in welcome, if that was what her beloved daughters felt was imperative she do, despite numerous and compelling arguments to the contrary. After her little speech, I could see doubt on some of the women's faces again, so I stood and delivered mine. Yes, I would put aside my differences with the old woman who'd turned me away the first night she'd ever met me, without even asking my name, who'd told me in no uncertain terms to go die somewhere else and leave her alone, when it had been obvious I was a she-seer in desperate need of help. Why hadn't I been one of her beloved daughters that night? Was it my fault I'd been raised with no idea what I was? Why hadn't she taken me in? But I would forgive her, and, yes, I would work with the woman who'd withheld the weapons that could kill Fay, refused to let the she-seers do the job they'd been born to do, and run a constant slander campaign against my sister, whose greatest mistake was being seduced by a Fey-turned human with hundreds of thousands of years of experience creating illusions and seducing women. Who among us might not have fallen under such circumstances? They'd met Valaine. If they wanted to throw stones, now was the time to do it, or never. Alina had ultimately seen through the Lord Master's act, and had paid with her life. Again, where had Rowena been when my sister was struggling to understand what she was? How had Alina and I gotten lost in the she-seer shuffle, abandoned to a life with no training? I was eager to do as Kat suggested, I told them, excited to work together toward common goals, putting the needs of the she-seers first. From this moment forward, I vowed, I would speak no ill of the Grand Mistress, provided she did the same of me. I sat. She would cooperate, Rowena said from her podium, despite that I'd continually proven myself unreliable and dangerous, allying myself with the likes of Valaine. "Excuse me, so did you," I pointed out.
"Only for the greater good."
"You wouldn't allow me to be part of the greater good. You denied me welcome here." Kat stood.
"Stop putting us in the middle. Grand Mistress, we must lay aside our differences. Do you not agree?"
Rowena was still a moment, then nodded tightly.
"Full cooperation," Kat pressed.
Rowena studied the gathered assembly in silence. I knew the precise moment she acknowledged that she'd lost too much ground with her flock to gain it back here and now. Either the two of us would pull the cart together, or the cart was going to leave us behind.
"Yes,"
she said tightly.
"Great!" I shot to my feet. "So, where was the book being kept? How was it being contained? And how in the world did you lose it?"
The roar in the hall was deafening, as I'd expected it to be. This, after all, was the question that had been bandied about these walls in whispers and secrecy for more than 20 years. I dropped back to my seat, curious to see how she would extricate herself. I had no doubt she would.
"Wicked cool, Mac," said Danny, grinning. "I think we've got her now."
I knew we didn't. Rowena was too clever to be trapped that easily. When the crowd finally quieted, she informed us with humble gravity that unfortunately such matters were not within her span of authority to discuss, that although I seemed to believe she was solely in charge, the Abbey had always been run as a democracy, governed by the Haven,
and all her actions and choices had to be approved or rejected by them, particularly in matters of such delicacy and danger. She must meet with the High Council, present our questions, and obey their dictates. Unfortunately, and conveniently for her, I noted dryly, some of them were not in-house at the moment. But as soon as they were, blah, 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 I muttered. By the time she gets around to telling us anything, the Unseelie will have killed a billion more humans. No matter. I was back in the walls of the Abbey. It was time to go to work on Plan A. This meeting had been Plan B. I looked at Danny. You said you'd been trying to get into the forbidden libraries. Do you know where all 21 of them are? Her eyes sparkled. Chapter 21. Danny knew her way around the Abbey's endless maze of stone corridors as well as any she-seer in the first 5 circles of ascension, she told me proudly. There were 7 circles of ascension in total, with the 7th being the Haven itself. Cat and her crew were in only the 3rd. She herself was subject to no such limits, Danny confided smugly. Rowena had set her apart from such matters as her own personal charge. So, Rowena told you where all the libraries are? That just didn't sound like the GM I knew. Well, no, Danny hedged, not exactly. So, okay, maybe she'd learned most of what she knew about the Abbey before Rowena and the other women figured out that a soft breeze meant she was near, when she'd still been able to snoop freely. What did it matter? She knew, and that was more than any of the others knew. It had taken her years to track down the libraries, and she still wasn't certain of a couple because she couldn't get down those corridors. But the way she figured it, they had to be libraries, because what else would Rowena be hiding?
"Place is huge and deadly weird, Mac," she told me. "There's parts of the Abbey don't make sense. Wasted space where you think something should be, but ain't."
I wanted to see all those places, but right now I needed to focus on the libraries. I'd barely slept last night. The conversation I overheard between my parents had played like a stuck record in my head. "Baby, I'm sorry to tell you this, but according to some ancient prophecy, there's something wrong with you, and you're going to doom the whole world." I'd been anxious to get my hands on the prophecy before. Now that it was supposedly about me, I was desperate. I wouldn't believe it was about me until I saw it with my own eyes, and even then I probably still wouldn't, unless it spelled out my entire name and said something as indubitably incriminating as, "Beware of that evil Michaela Lane. She's a piece of work. Gonna doom the whole world, that wench." I snorted. Absurd. Had Alina learned any of this? Was that why she'd kept me so far away? Not just for my own good, but because she'd learned something about me that made her afraid to get me involved, for the world's sake.
"Nah," I said derisively. "It's two," Danny defended. "I can show you 'em."
I snapped back to the present. "Sorry, I was thinking out loud. I believe you. I want to see those places. But first, the libraries." We wound down one corridor after the next. They all looked the same to me. The Abbey was huge. Without Danny, I might have wandered for days trying to find my way around. Before I came to the Abbey the first time, I'd researched it and learned that the enormous stone fortress had been constructed on consecrated ground in the 7th century, when a church originally built by St. Patrick in 441 A.D. had burned down. That church had been built to replace a crumbling stone circle some claimed had long ago been sacred to an ancient pagan sisterhood. The stone circle had been predated by a Sheehan, or fairy mound, that had allegedly concealed within it an entrance to the other world. Translation: this specific spot of earth, this precise longitude and latitude, had been a place of great importance, sacred and protected as far back as records went, and, I had no doubt, even further. Why? Because a book of unspeakable power had been trapped beneath it for thousands and thousands of years? The Abbey was plundered in 913, rebuilt in 1022, burned in 1123, rebuilt in 1218, burned in 1393, and rebuilt in 1414.
It was expanded and fortified each time. It was added onto in the 16th century and again extensively in the 17th, sponsored by an anonymous wealthy donor who completed the rectangle of stone buildings, enclosing the inner courtyard and adding housing, much to the astonishment of the locals, for up to 1,000 residents. This same unknown donor bought the land around the abbey and turned the enclave into the self-sustaining operation it was today. If I ever had the time to act instead of always being so busy reacting, I wanted to find out who that unknown donor was. I glanced at my watch. It was 3 p.m. and my schedule was tight. I was supposed to meet the She-Seers in Dublin at 7, then Barons at 10, for who knew what purpose. Further hampering my appointment calendar was the L.M.'s threat to return for me in 3 days, which put an uncomfortable squeeze on, because I couldn't decide what day that was going to be. Was he counting all day yesterday, which meant he would return on Saturday morning, or had he meant to begin counting on Friday, which meant he would return on Sunday? Maybe he'd meant to allow me 3 full days and plan to come back on the 4th. It was all irritatingly vague. Not only had he threatened me, but he'd not even given me a specific date and time for my impending whatever. I planned to discuss it with Barons tonight. He was my wave. I was counting on him to keep the LM from making good on any threats. Back to my time crunch. Take me to the corridors you're barred from, Danny. What's keeping you out? I envisioned thick stone walls blocking them off, maybe vault